What's up, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Shinigami Love Apples podcast. I'm Shinigami Ping Ping, and I'm joined across from me with Shinigami Yu Yu. And this is a special episode. This one's not, but it's a special circumstance because we always record our episodes like a few days in advance. So this is a double back-to-back because you're going to be gone next week. So we have to cover since none of you wants to listen to me vamp for any reasonable length of time because that just sounds like misery. So we've decided we're going to record episodes back-to-back. So all the Twitch viewers are loving their lives right now. You're wincing like, did I forget the fan again?
It's on purpose. It's a joke.
It's going to become a running. It's lore. Non-intentional. No, lore. Yeah, that's the whooshing sound of us being dragged off to hell. I promise it's not intentional. I know no one's going to believe me when I say that, but it's not intentional. I swear to God. Anyway, so we are doing back-to-back episodes today. So Twitch viewers are loving their lives while we do both back-to-back. And then for those of you listening to this on the podcast itself, the next episode, so next week's episode, is going to be a technology special, which you can look forward to, which will be a lot of fun. We've got a bunch of kind of cool myth-busting history of science stuff to talk about and some really cool, like, forward-thinking Japanese technologies. But enough about the episodes. How was your week?
Bad.
Well, off to a roaring start. Are you going to elaborate, or are we just going to say our prayers for you and move on?
Yeah. Every week is the same thing. I work, I sleep, I be sad. I do podcasts, I work, I sleep, I be sad.
Does the podcast make you happy? That was a really anticlimactic long pause. We really tried to dramatize that, and it's just... there's like an expiration to comedy punchlines, where after a certain number of seconds after you try to attempt to deliver the punchline, it stops being funny. But we tried.
Yeah, no, I tried.
My week has gone better, but not, because I finally got the job I was aiming for, so hooray me. But I'm in limbo, because since it's a salary job, I'm now entering the salary negotiations and job benefits negotiations phase, which I've never had to do because I've never been salaried. I know what I'm doing on a sort of ground level, but I'm also not anxious, but definitely uncomfortable with it because I've never had to do it before. So it's like, it's weird being hired but not hired. Like, there's no paperwork done on the terms of this is how much you're going to get paid, here's your first day, show up, have fun.
Yeah.
But I am hired.
Right.
It's weird. I'm not ready to put in my 2 weeks, but I'm definitely living in two worlds right now. So that's kind of freaking weird. We got nothing to backpedal, but we do have a lot of stuff to talk about from our week. So first things, this is a really cool little history note. It's weird when you say like history and anime, because it's like no one, I don't want to say no one gives a fuck, because that's not fair. Lots of people do, but like when we say something has made history, it's like, okay, and you know, oh wow, it's like launching a rocket to the moon or something. You know,
it's still, as far as history is concerned, anime is still very, very, very new.
Yeah, and not super significant on most people's radar. But a big thing for anime this week, Frieren: Beyond Journey's End. With an absolute monster rating of 9.39, that is unheard of, has completely supplanted Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood as the top-rated anime of all time. And now, it's worth considering this is kind of based off of my anime list's aggregate. So, you know, do with that information what you will. If you don't believe that my anime list is very thorough, okay, I guess you could argue there are more popular anime. And then, of course, then you can look at sales metrics and merch metrics. You want to go buy that shit, then you got One Piece. And in Naruto and all the rest.
It's not saying that this is more popular. It's just saying it's the top rated.
Top rated,
So honestly, you couldn't say sales and all that stuff.
Right, that's true. Yeah. But like, people just associate sort of, anytime you build a ranking, people get frothy at the mouth over, they get super defensive, especially over whatever is supplanted. Yeah. Like, for my anime list, for sure, I promise you, Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood fans are going to be up in arms like, that's not that good.
Yeah.
And it's like, calm the fuck down, dude. It's a metric.
I might, I'd argue that if you like Brotherhood, you probably would like Frieren anyway, so.
Just for vibe.
Yeah.
Just for vibe, yeah.
I have a feeling a lot of the people that have both of those would have both of those set as like a 9 or a 10 anyway. Yeah. So they might not be that upset.
Well, it's the same with like Apothecary Diaries. If you enjoyed Free Ren for vibe, you probably enjoyed Apothecary Diaries because female lead and good vibe as well. Yeah. So kind of just a really cool little piece of history. So I was going to mention something else, but I forgot to type it down on the agenda. So my brain derailed and I'm like, I'm really bad at vamping. So I'm just going to have to leave that. And we can go on to video games because we do have a lot to talk about in video games.
Yeah. Which isn't Genshin.
Oh, fuck. We just lost our sponsorship. Shit. Oh, we're so Hoyoverse.
Hold on. I'll backpedal.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to do mid-episode backpedal. I love Genshin Impact. It is very fun. Okay, now moving on to the thing I want to talk about. There we go. We hit our quota. No, there's this new game. It's not fully out. They just put out a demo for it.
Oh, like teasers? A
demo.
Actual playable demo.
Yeah.
Whoa. Haven't seen those in a while.
Yeah, called Stellar Blade.
I want to look this up.
Yes. It's made by the developers of Nikkei.
Ooh, not. Wow, they must have made some good change from a mobile game to
branch
out. Okay, cool.
This game, it looks incredible. Like, I honestly was watching some gameplay and I was shocked that this was on a PlayStation. Like, the graphics are insane. I haven't watched too much into it, so I can't speak too much about the gameplay, but a lot of people are really, really loving it.
The graphics are nuts.
Yeah.
Sorry, wow, I'm just looking at screenshots. That is awesome. It's age restricted? I mean, I guess violence. Wow. If these are cutscene caps, that's not fair because cutscene caps are often pre-render and you can absolutely bake the hell out of a pre-render.
But no, like if you look at actual gameplay, it is insanely detailed.
There's some serious monster detailing in this. That's eerie.
It is. It's really, really nice.
Facial details. Damn.
A lot of people are really, really loving it. I was telling you earlier, I had to convince myself not to just go out and buy a PlayStation 5 specifically so I can play this game, but I really, really want to play this game. It looks so, so good. We're gonna talk about this a little bit more in a second, but there's been gamers and like anime fans and just overall nerdy fans and people who are actually like watching / playing it really like it. Generic, just like dry boned so and so who doesn't know anything about it or is very upset about it.
I know where we're going with this. Yeah. Okay.
And we're gonna talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But Stellar Blade looks incredible. I really want to play it at some point. I don't know.
You know, it's kind of interesting because for me, I don't usually see many mobile developers. Now that I think about it, was Hoyoverse originally mobile developer and they branched out? Okay.
Yeah.
That's now that I'm starting to see this more and more, and though Nikkei is probably made by are they a Chinese developer as well? Or are they?
No, Nikkei is. So Stellar Blade made Nikkei and they are Korean.
Korean. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Neat. But I've noticed mobile developers as of late have fallen into only one of two categories. And I'm not going to start a serious rant on this because microtransactions in the world of mobile gaming are rant worthy, but it's cool to see mobile game devs taking the funding they've made from, let's be honest, some pretty microtransaction heavy content.
Yeah.
Taking that funding, spun it off and went, okay, now we can make the games we actually want to make. Mm-hmm. Because usually when you look at a studio that makes like Clash of Clans, there's usually one of two ways they take their money. Either one, they just take it and they're like, ha ha ha.
Yeah.
Which was Farmville and all the other microtransaction Facebook bullshit, Plants versus Zombies.
Yeah.
Pick an IP from that period. They all just took their money and ran with it. Mm-hmm. Went to the bank. And then you haven't really heard of them much since. Follow-ups to their content, but really, like, that's about it.
Yeah.
But it's cool. The other thing developers, though, do is if they're not just going to the bank with the money, is they take it and they usually make, like, cinematics or series with it. Like I know Clash of Clans has tried a couple times to... Well, Angry Birds made a movie.
Yeah.
And then Clash of Clans, I know, has thought... Their developers or whoever they are have thought about doing the same thing because they've made a bunch of YouTube shorts and short movies.
They dipped their toes into...
Like cinematic cartoon storytelling? No.
Why am I blanking?
What, on another game?
No, like professional esports.
Oh, esports. Oh, yeah, like yeah.
Esports and stuff. Yeah, which like
okay. Yeah, I guess not very thrilling.
Yeah,
I suppose if it floats your boat.
Yeah.
But instead, Nikkei's developer has done something most don't do, and they've just re-spent the money, which is kind of unusual.
Yeah.
And they've gone, hey, we're going to take all this cash and we're going to inject it into what most. I'm just sitting on the PlayStation official website.
Yeah. I think the difference is that unlike the US, we view phone games as like cheap little one-offs that we do when we're on the shitter.
Yeah.
But in Asian countries, especially in like China, like that is their main form of playing video games. They don't have, you know, $3,000 PCs and game consoles and all that stuff. And so like that's taken a lot more seriously and makes a lot more money. And so I think these developers are just like, well, we'll start on the quote unquote easy side of things, build up a big audience, get a bunch of money, and then we'll make our like dream product.
Yeah. And again, it's just amazing because I'm looking at the screen caps. I'm actually looking at gameplay now. Wow. That is a very,
it's awesome.
What? It's just insane to me that a mobile developer has managed to rally such an incredible looking and what looks like a very fun feeling game. I'm just looking at gameplay for skills and combat. It just it looks great.
Yeah, it's super. Super fun. There's a lot of like, here, like crazy little details in it too. Like her sword is her hairpiece. So when she like grabs her, like she has like a little like hair tie thing. And then when she grabs her sword, she grabs her hair tie and it becomes the sword. And then vice versa, when she sheaths it, it goes down into a little hairpiece.
Oh, yeah, I see. Whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, there's tons of just like crazy little detail like that.
So, yeah, hopefully it turns out well. But obviously, is it a console exclusive?
As far as I'm aware, it is PlayStation only. Yeah, because it's through Sony. Brutal. Yeah.
Oh, that's why.
They might. Distributor. The thing is, Sony has had a trend now where they put it on their PlayStation and then they wait like 5 years and then they put it on PC, so it might come to at some point, but
yeah, you know, way after it's relevant and everyone's already played it in Japan,
unfortunately.
Which, to be fair, the console market in Japan is larger than in the US or like as a percentile of people playing video games, just because, like you mentioned, not a lot of folks running full home computer setups in Japan. Actually, I had noticed when I was looking through like Japanese streamers and Japanese content creators, the vast majority of them don't have our like cozy game cave / game zen. Yeah. Like they don't really do that. It's mostly for them. It's kind of I threw my PS4 or 5 under the table and hooked it up to my living room TV, and that's what I'm doing my content on.
Yeah.
And that seems to be pretty common. So it kind of makes sense that these developers are going to aim for a console, and of course it would control better on console anyway. Not that you couldn't use a controller on PC, but just native console support makes sense.
Makes certain things easier. But yeah, I'm really excited about this. And just to give like a little bit of a sneak peek into what we're talking about, people have been upset. Sorry. People who have nothing to do with the game or game industries or anything at all are upset because the protagonist is a female in a skin suit.
Oh, here we go again. Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're not upset about anything outside of how come hot lady on my screen. We shouldn't be doing this. But the thing is, everybody's like, she's unrealistic. She doesn't have real proportions of a real human being. Whoever made this dumb shit probably.
Wait,
really? This is what IGN said. Hold on. I'll get to it. IGN wrote an article stating that whoever created this game must have never seen a woman in real life. Here's the kicker. They did a full 360 body scan of an actual Korean model, and they changed nothing. If you look at her next to the model, like the actual person who modeled, they are identical.
Her proportions are correct.
She is a very like, normal looking person. Like she's hot, and she's she's a bit more fit.
Korean,
but she's just a person. Yeah,
like okay.
And people are upset about it, but it's just because skin suit and
yeah. But when's the last time they bitched about Bayonetta? I mean, come on, like.
They don't.
This is not Bayonetta, okay? Yeah. You know, we're not stretching, whatever.
Yeah.
Go after fucking Barbie or some shit. Jesus. Like, over here.
Well, Barbie's white, so you're not allowed to do that.
Oh, you're right. That's right. This is a minority in a video game, and we as white people have to, attack minorities.
Yeah.
We defend them on the podcast, but, you know, I understand other white people.
Yeah. No, it's just people who have no business talking about anything that are seizing the opportunity to get their, like, Twitter likes.
Okay. Yeah, great. Well, on other games that are less controversial, I've decided just for leisure time since I had extra time this weekend to play RimWorld again. Which, there is no game that can quite so easily trigger me.
Yeah.
In a masochistically pleasurable way as RimWorld. So RimWorld, for those of you who don't know, is a survival... It's a colony building survival game, but it is essentially a Dwarf Fortress, but with graphics. And now, of course, Dwarf Fortress has graphics, so this kind of makes this a not great analogy, but essentially, it is just a game where you have to build a colony and survive random events, and the whole storytelling engine is built on a difficulty curve, a true difficulty curve with no tweaking. It generally starts flat and becomes more vertical as the game goes on. And the whole game concept is you pick your storyteller, and in between, that curve gets modified by your storyteller. So if you have, like, Randy Random is his name, then on that curve, you'll have random-ass extreme highs and lows, extremely beneficial events and extremely detrimental events just randomly. But if you pick one like Phoebe Chillax, she'll follow the curve as strictly as she can, but she still has a difficulty spike.
Yeah.
Well, RimWorld makes you think strategically about, like, is what I'm doing a smart move given the condition of my colony? Like, are my colonists healthy enough to do this? Do they have the skills enough to do this? Do I have the supplies and the defenses and all this stuff? And it's really, I really love it. And I cannot say enough, I'm not hating on it when I say it triggers me, but like yesterday I spent 6 hours on what's called the Naked Brutality.
Yeah.
I chose a completely random, I did random everything, which means the settler I got was a pacifist. So he refuses to lift even a club to beat up a poor rabbit for food.
Right.
Nah, this dude will fucking starve to death.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck, I'm going to have to figure out a way around this. But I got lucky because he had plant skill. So I was over there planting crops maniacally and just running around harvesting all these berries and all this other shit. And I was doing great. I finally got clothes on him. So he's fully clothed, was able to make his own clothes, had electricity, which was just like, whoa, we got an electric furnace and all this other shit.
Yeah.
And I was just loving the playthrough. And finally the game, I was playing on, I always play on Phoebe Chillax because I don't want to be stressed while playing a game. I don't get off on that.
Well, even the chill version is already stressful.
Yeah, because it ramps on a perfect, again, it falls, so you know it's coming.
Yeah.
But at least Phoebe follows the curve. It's not, I could never do Randy. It's just, it hurts too much. It's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But it's funny, Phoebe decided to be random yesterday for whatever fucking reason. I was just walking along and it's fall, like fall, winter, so it's just getting cold. 40 animals on my screen, tons of wildlife. And I walk to rescue a colonist that has been downed in a spacecraft, which is one of the game's mechanics. It's one of the ways you get new settlers.
Yeah.
Is you get these transport pod crashes. So I go over and I'm going to go, I bring some medicine, I treat them on the spot, and I'm going to carry them back to the base to revive them, and hopefully they'll join me. First things first, they were a pretty shit character.
Yeah.
They were an immense drug, like, stoner. They were extremely addicted to, like, five different drugs. they were missing tons of little parts of their body, like, missing, like, two fingers and three toes, and just, they were scratched and scarred, and I'm like, it's like, okay, this is a pretty, and their skills were horrible. It was a pretty bum deal. But I was like, nope, this is the fun of RimWorld. I'm going to turn this into a successful colony.
Yeah.
At least this person can hunt. So now I can solve my food problem.
Yeah.
During winter, because I can't grow crops in winter. So I start bringing him back. And as I'm walking, I get the of a danger alert. And I'm like, you know, okay, I must have gotten too cold or something. And now I have a parka. And so I move my camera over and a grizzly bear has eaten.
Yeah.
My settler, my one and only settler has been eaten. And because I haven't yet rescued the other colonist, they can't be revived and therefore become my last remaining member of the colony.
Yeah.
My dude is carrying this person and just gets attacked by a grizzly bear. And next to like 40 rabbits and 30 deer, this bear is like, nah, fuck that human.
Yeah.
Comes after me, kills me. And the game goes, and you can see the game think about it go, because normally the game will automatically not quit. It'll warn you the game is over because you have no way to continue.
Yeah.
If you do have a slim to none chance that you could just fast forward time and wait, the game will actually let you, and your colony will, you know, your crops will grow.
Yeah.
Your base will run. And maybe if you get lucky, somehow you get freed by another settlement because those random events can happen.
Yeah.
Nope. It went straight to the, you're fucked, which means that guy that I spent all my medicine on and therefore was actually healing, not only was healed, but decided not to join my colony.
Yeah.
After being revived, in watching his rescuer die to a grizzly bear. Yeah. He doesn't go, man, I'm going to keep this colony going. It's okay. I feel no, fuck that guy. Fuck this whole colony. It's cursed. I'm gone. And it ended my playthrough. And I was just like,
nice. Yeah.
That was a juicy slot. That was, yeah. That's how I felt about it. I went straight to Genshin and just stared at the screen for like five. I just stared at Shenyun's ass for like 5 minutes. Yeah. Trying to relieve myself is not a good term. To feel better about myself. There we go. Yeah. Just like, I'm an okay gamer. I'm an okay gamer. So yeah.
That's funny.
Kind of miserable. Oh, sorry, shit. Ah! Sorry.
Yeah, nice.
I had to go off and cough there. I'm sorry. Anyway, enough of my sick noises. I'm not sick. I just allergies. Aww. Next up, oldies with moldies. Yay. And we've got Yuyu's. Oh, talk about. No, we'll do it next week. We'll do it next week.
Oldies with moldies. Yay.
I mean, we don't have a soundbite for that. We need to get soundbites for stuff. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Okay. I would like to, before I start, I would like to let you all know that you could email me at shinigamiloveapples.podcast@gmail.com because I'm going to say something that's going to make every single person that has ever been alive very upset.
Oh, I'm so stoked. I know where this is going already.
I'm going to be reviewing an anime movie called Your Name, which is highly rated by fucking idiots.
I knew it was coming. I was just like, you know, you don't preface with a fucking disclaimer.
Yeah.
Unless you were about to absolutely buck the trend and you didn't disappoint.
If any of you fucking dumbasses rated this more than like, okay, I rated a 6. So if you rated it more than a 6, fucking do anything else with your life.
Okay.
This movie, to be fair, started out really good. So it's about two characters that are essentially, they swap lives.
Oh, okay.
Periodically. So one's a boy in Tokyo, the other one is a girl in the countryside.
Okay.
Basically the same age, but they randomly will wake up in each other's bodies. Okay. So the first part of the movie is them discovering that they can do this and being kind of like weirded out. Especially because the guy, like, every time the guy wakes up in the girl's body, he just like immediately grabs her boobs and starts squeezing until the little sister walks in and goes like, what are you doing?
Yeah. You see, little sis, I just, when you become my age, you just really want to go.
Yeah.
Putty, 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 putty.
But it's them like attempting to live their lives outside of their own body. But the catch is they don't ever remember doing that.
Okay.
So when they go back to their main bodies, they are like trying to figure out what happened because things in their life aren't going the way that they would normally go, because she's like a nice, proper, smart student.
Yeah.
She's part of like a shrine family, so she's very like proper and traditional and everything. He's just like some punk kid in the middle of Tokyo who likes to goof off and, you know, just do dumb shit. So you get these sort of back and forth. Eventually, they start to like get these inklings that something's happening. And so they write down, they both write down in like their journals what happened that day. And then they discover like, oh, somebody else is living my life. So then they start making notes with each other. Like, this is what I did this day. Please don't do this to me. This, you know, all this stuff.
That's,
and she's like trying to fix him and he's just trying to have fun.
Oh,
and so he like she'll like, she's like, there's a girl that the main character or the main male character is like slightly interested in, but she's like an older lady who already has a boyfriend, but he kind of has a crush on her. They work together. So when she is in his body, she's like being all lovey dovey and like knows exactly what to say, obviously, because she's a woman, and she's like trying to set him up. And then he's like, you're fucking over my life. Stop doing this. It's very cute. But then they try to start meeting each other. Because they want to, obviously they.
Yeah, they want to know what's going on. Meet I want to know the person who's living in my. Yeah.
And this is where things start to get a little weird, and then they ruin it horrifically. So they're going back and forth trying to meet each other. You find out that they're actually 13 years apart. So when he goes back to her, or when he's in her body, he's 13 years previous, or something like that.
Okay.
But not really. Kind of, but not really. it's I don't know. Okay. Maybe this is where I lost maybe it? Maybe I missed something and this is why I hate it so much. But there's this weird time gap where he goes back and forth in time. You find out that a meteor actually crashed, landed into this small town and killed everybody. So he's like going back in time, living the life of a dead girl. Well, she's alive at the time.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when they stop, they lose communication at one point because he outlives her. So he can't keep going back and forth anymore because she's not alive.
She's gone, yeah.
But they like, she tries to go to Tokyo, but again, he's too young and he doesn't know her yet.
Yeah,
because he hasn't lived the past life thing. There's this whole, it's super confusing. The thing is, it is no longer like this fun love story about these two characters that are like changing lives and kind of sort of falling in love with each other and just kind of cute, whatever, to complete 180 where he enters her life and then convinces all of her friends about this big crazy conspiracy theory that the planet's going to end.
Oh,
because technically it does, but he's in the past now, so they didn't know about it. So then they do this whole like rigmarole of her attempting to convince everybody to leave the town so that when the meteor hits, they don't all die, but nobody believes her. And then there's this, like, because they're shrine maiden people, there's this whole spiritual side of things where the grandma knows of this like special tree where she can like, I don't even know, she makes like tea, but it's like the traditional tea where you actually like mush it in your mouth and spit it out.
Yeah.
Or like alcohol, I guess. And you spit it out. And so she makes this tea, the spit tea, and then puts it under the tree and then tells him about it. So he goes to visit this broken down place, and then he goes to the tree and he drinks her spit water, and then they become connected as one. So he can like go back in time again to relive her life.
So it honestly sounds like they had a really good, simple concept going.
Yeah, and then they fucked it.
And then they went, hey, let's make this really obscenely complex because the simple concept won't carry us far enough.
Dude, it's so bad. That's what I'm saying. It started out incredible and then just completely fell apart in every way possible. But then they were like, so he inside of her body finally convinces her friends to do, like, basically just set off bombs. And they blow up like the local power grid and stuff to like evacuate people.
Oh, to get
so they turn into a terrorist attack because no one will believe that there's a meteor that's about to hit them.
Yeah.
So they create an act of terrorism to get people to show up or to like leave the city and go to the safe
bunker or safe zone,
like the school,
like evac zone.
Zone at the school. And then because of that, she lives, but they forget each other
because they've changed.
Because they've changed timelines and stuff, so none of them, neither of them, know each other anymore, or even why any of that happened. They've moved on; they're now adults at this point, like post college.
Yeah,
he's a salary man. She's doing, I can't remember what she did, but they're both in Tokyo, and they happen to see each other on the train. And she always has this ribbon that she would like tie her hair open. That I guess at some point in the past she gave him the ribbon. And so he happens to have the ribbon and he's got it like wrapped around his wrist, but he doesn't know why. He just fucking does it. And she sees that and she goes, wait, that's my thing. Then she goes, why do I know you? And the movie ends with them on some stairs and they pass each other because they're both like, why do I know this person? And they turn around and they go, what's your name? End credit.
Literally.
I feel bad giving
credits.
It a six.
Here's
this
the thing,
this deserves
right?
like a four. It's so bad.
I'm a firm believer. So in the movie biz, they always say, don't work with children or animals, right? Because it causes so much catastrophic fuck up during the production cycle.
Yeah.
I have my own personal modification of that saying for content, which is don't try to tell stories about time travel.
Yeah.
Because you will bury yourself in lore you can never get out of. I am personally a huge anti-fan of time travel stories. Now, I'm going to clarify that by saying that I really enjoyed the portions of Tokyo Revengers that I've seen. I have heard some pretty negative reviews of this continuing, so we'll see how that goes. But I am a fan of the first season of Tokyo Revengers.
Yeah, the first season was really good.
But even then, I'm really shy about time travel.
Yeah.
Because in my personal opinion, time travel is the ultimate red herring, the ultimate deus ex machina, the ultimate get out of jail free card of you can write off almost anything. As long, no one cares about the science side. Let's be honest, outside of like Steins Gate, nobody really tries to delve into the science of why it's possible or even why you're doing it. Like the morality side, all people care about is how the event in timeline A affects the event in timeline B. And then the write-off is always timeline shifts. And you get into this vague world where everybody starts waving their hands in the air in circles and goes, it's because of multiverse. It's one of the reasons I loathe the MCU and will never, ever be a fan of it. Yeah. I hate the MCU with my whole heart. Fuck Marvel. I hate their properties. Because Marvel is the laziest bunch of shits I've ever seen write content. Yeah. Because they literally go, hey, you're really enjoying things in this timeline, and I need to make more movies so I can make more money. So we're just going to create timeline two. Woo!
Yeah.
Now everybody's gender swapped and they're different now. Look. I don't have any problem with the gender swapping. I don't have any problems with how you want to branch into the multiverse, whatever the fuck, but it's convenient. It's always convenient.
Yeah.
The only time you bring up the multiverse is when you really have to write yourself out of a story corner that you wrote yourself into.
Yeah. It makes like conflict not matter anymore.
No,
because it's really easy to just say, "Oh, well, they figured it out."
Well, like one of my favorite movies of all time, and I'm going to use Marvel just to prove that I'm not just a shithead who shits on Marvel because I hate the property. I don't. My favorite action movie of all time is the original Iron Man.
Mm.
Just one of my favorite action movies. Just unhinged joy watching that movie, and I still watch it. The thing about the original Iron Man, though, is, you know, ignore the whole multiverse thing that later comes up and then whatever. Ignoring all of the extended Marvel universe and how it affects Iron Man's story.
Yeah.
Iron Man's story works because you don't write yourself out of the holes. The hole they wrote themselves into in Iron Man 1 is, here's a man who's been devastated by a terrorist attack, and the only option he has to escape is to use what's around him that he's been commissioned to design, because he's a billionaire playboy who knows shit and is smart. To get out of it, and the consequences will forever be that he is now aware of how to build this technology.
Yeah.
And he is now has the burden of knowing how to build this incredible technology that powers the entire fucking Marvel universe for the next 100 movies.
Yeah.
Right? The arc reactor.
Yeah.
But the reason I let them go with that and wave their hands with generic science bullshit is because it is believable to me that some science genius going through personal struggle would rally himself to do something hands-on if it means surviving one more day.
Right.
And that story, that triumph story, is what drives Iron Man, not the fucking arc reactor. In fact, the worst part of the whole movie is the arc reactor fight.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't drive anything. What drives the whole fucking movie is Tony Stark is Iron Man.
Yeah.
That's it. That's, and well, roll credits.
Right.
This movie sounds like it's a victim of lazy multiversal writing. Hey guys, we need conflict. Give me something. Okay, we got a meteor. Okay, meteor in the corner. All right, cool. Meteors, what are we going to do? Well, it only happens in one timeline and the other it doesn't. So he's got to go back to save him. Dude, okay. If I had a penny for every time travel story where someone went back to tell lottery numbers, disasters, or love stories. Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard it all before.
Right.
And honestly, you had me on the whole body swap thing because I was like, Freaky Friday, but not sort of different.
That's the thing is, like, it started out really great.
It sounds solid.
Here's the thing. If they made this a rom-com, which is what it started out as, of two kids trying to get through school and living two separate lives.
It was comedy. I didn't know it was comedy. I thought it was just.
Yes.
Oh.
Initially, it was comedy. It was a rom-com turned time travel action adventure.
Okay.
For some reason. But here's the thing. If they kept that whole premise out, the whole thing where they eventually graduated and then met up with each other and then end a story, they fell in love. That would have been great.
Yeah. It sounds like.
Also,
sounds odd.
If they kept the time travel bit and just that she died and the conflict was that he changed his life and was falling in love with a girl who's dead.
That
would have been great. That would have been a tragedy, but it would have been a good one.
Would have been a really poignant.
But instead they were like, no, we're going to turn this into an action adventure and save everybody. Also, they meet each other at the end, but you don't get to see anything. They never talk to each other, fall in love with each other. They just say the name of the movie. It's like, bro, what were you guys doing? You had two fantastic endings, and you were like, no. Good endings are so 18th century. We need a bad ending.
And the other thing, too, is Kimi no Na wa, well, sorry, I always default to his Japanese name, your name, does not have the luxury of being a series. If you're a series, you can kind of write yourself into some holes and then take a couple episodes to get out.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have 12, 18, 24 episodes. In a movie, you can't get away with lazy writing because the audience is going to, their short-term memory is going to store that, and it's going to come back up 45 minutes from now.
Yeah.
And I really hope you've got an answer because the audience remembers the question.
Yeah.
And this just sounds like they didn't. That's a bummer.
It was horrible.
Well, you know, I, you know what? I'm going to watch it this week because I really want to. I'm one of those suckers for a good drama, and I want to watch it just to see if there's anything redeemable about it from my perspective. Yeah. You know, my background with an English degree and random ass, you know, like, oh, I like creative writing. I'm just curious how much of this is predictable from a story writing trope perspective of it's a time travel movie. Because I guarantee
I wouldn't
you,
mind rewatching it. Because I'm kind of wondering if I just my rage boiled and I missed something, and maybe it's not quite as bad. But
maybe,
just,
but at the same token, what you're explaining is common to almost every time travel.
Yeah.
TV anything.
Yeah, it's just it has an 8.84 on my anime list. I cannot fathom how.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? You say that in almost a state of like incredulousness, but there are tons of series I've seen that got. Eights and nines. Good. And I was just like, Solo Leveling. I cannot for the life of me understand why it's popular.
It's funny that we started the episode saying Frieren and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood were nines, just over nine. This is almost a nine.
Yeah.
How
is it so close? Yeah.
How do you have two absolutely beautiful pieces of media and then this fucking just like generic dog shit?
Yeah.
And they're almost rated the exact same.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll have to watch it then check it out. Now, I know we've just spent a couple minutes ranting, but we're going to rant for at least a couple minutes more because now we have the things we think are fucking dumb.
And, oh, dude.
This is a good.
This is a special for me because I'm getting berated by IGN fucking shit, dog shit ass fucking clickbait titles. And I don't know if it's just entering my sphere of land or if they're just like, oh, shit, we're falling apart. Let's get everybody mad.
I mean,
my fucking God, dude. I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but IGN is the ones who are like, oh, fucking Stellar Blade. They've never seen a real woman before without doing any research into the fact that, like, oh, they did actually bring in a full woman and scan her body and then didn't change anything. It was like an actual real representation of a real woman. They also did this. They had the audacity to call Frieren an isekai. They wrote this whole article about isekai and how it's misunderstood and people don't understand what the word means and that Frieren itself is an isekai. And everybody's just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Their argument was that isekai means different world. Not that it means that you die and go to a different world. It just means different world as a whole.
Yeah.
And people are like, even by that definition, Frieren is not set on Earth. It's set in their land. Just because it's not on our land doesn't mean it's a different world. They were born and raised there. That is not a different world.
Also, why are we making the differentiation? Why does it matter? Like, why is IGN's like, oh, hey, there's this popular property. We got to make clickbait about it quick. It's an isekai. Dude,
literally, what? It's just rage bait, like, clickbait, fucking low tier garbage that they're just trying to get as many click throughs as possible so they can run their ads or whatever, and it doesn't matter what it actually says or how people feel about it.
There was a long time ago. Now I need to be really careful because I've been Googling this while you're talking and I cannot find a source for it, so I don't want to be accusatory, but I do remember a review of Stray, the post-apocalyptic cat game. And I do not remember who it was. I want to say it's IGN, but I won't make accusations. If someone finds it, link me to it and send it to the Gmail. But I remember a reviewer claiming that they were not going to play a game like Stray because inevitably they probably abused the cats to make it. And the Stray developers themselves responded to the review going, we put the cat suits, the motion capture suits out over and over again to see if the cats would be interested in them. They were. Then we put it on them. We recorded the reactions to it, which they literally use in game. At one point, you get a backpack as the cat in the game, and the cat like slumps under, like, I don't want to wear this. And they took it off the cat.
Yeah.
But they let the cat experience this so they could see if the cat would come back. And the cats kept coming back to enjoy. Yeah. There was no like bribery of, well, we'll give you treats if you do. And eventually, the cats just enjoyed it so much that they just put the suits on them and then just let them run. And that's how they got their motion capture. They just let them run about the studio, this massive room with motion capture suits on. And at no point were the cats harmed.
Yeah.
And they responded to this review going, the fuck are you talking about? We had three oversight committees watching the animal handling this. And all, by the way, there are personal fucking pets.
Yeah.
They don't.
Well, also just like take 2 seconds to think about it. If you want an authentic cat experience, which is what they're going for, abusing the cat isn't going to be authentic.
No,
it's going to be scary
jank.
And heart-wrenching and sad watching a cat fucking cower in fear the whole time. But if you play the game or just watch
but
it,
like,
they're very clearly not doing that.
I want to know why reviewers feel the need. Look, okay, yes, we're a brand new podcast. We're a brand new podcast. Sure, we've just crested triple digits for listeners, which is cool.
Yeah.
But like, we're extremely small fry in the podcast world. But at no point have I thought to myself, you know what I need? I need some rage bait. I need to stir some conflict for the sake of generating some click through. I do have things I think are pretty rage baity. Like, again, I don't like solo leveling, but I can tell you why. I can give you reasons. I can point to the story. We can have a discussion about it. I'm not just going, I've never even seen this shit. Just lambast it. Obviously, bad representation of women.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out that, you know, with IGN shitting on Stellar Blade, they're shitting on the public press kit of the game because the game's not released yet.
Yeah.
And they didn't play a release version. So they're over here like,
They weren't even talking about the game itself. They were just saying that the woman was attractive.
Yeah. But my point is they were probably given a press kit.
Most games are.
They were given a press kit with materials.
Yeah.
You judged the entire game off face value?
Yeah.
The fuck? How are you a reviewer?
Yeah.
And you were given a press kit and went, press kit, final content.
Right. Well, the thing is, she also has other outfits, and like the bodysuit is just her underlayer, which you can wear, but you could also add other outfits to it.
So, hold on. I'm literally Googling this phrase. IGN hates on quiet from Metal Gear. I just want to see if they've...
Oh, probably.
I'm just looking to see if IGN's ever talked about it. I mean, they've got a whole guide on how to acquire her. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, IGN, I see you're happy to capitalize on quiet from Metal Gear. But no, yeah, it's just stupid. Look, in IGN, we've raged about them before. I've also warned, because I do use their articles every now and then, because they do often have industry information that I want. But I've said multiple times, they're a very biased source for a reason. They present their news in a way that is clickbaity in hopes that somebody will rant enough to click through.
Yeah.
And that's why we think they're fucking dumb. Anyway, we are going to take a momentary break, and we will be right back with Serious Shit. And we're back. So for those of you who are new to the format, welcome to Serious Shit. The second half of our podcast is where we like to cover cultural and news topics affecting Japan, kind of in the real-time day-to-day. As always, we like to serve a little bit of a trigger warning and, you know, just let you know that sometimes some of the stuff we talk about can be a bit, you know, negative. Yeah. Today's topics aren't, though. I'm just going to point that out. You know, I don't want anybody getting all disappointed and leaving before I've even talked about it. Because we were talking about this last week where you're like, hey, you know, maybe we should modify our delivery.
Yeah, well, because we kept saying like, oh, we're going to get real serious. And if you're triggered by this, and then we would talk about like baseball cats.
Yeah.
And
it's like, wow, there's nothing really bad about this.
Yeah.
But the reason we serve that warning, in case you or any of you are curious, is just because the real world topics are a bit different than the memes. The memes, I can shit on solo leveling all I want. At the end of the day, it's just anime. When you get into the real world topics, obviously someone's lives are being affected by this. So we try not to be too callous, especially as foreigners. It's kind of hard for us to stay unbiased sometimes. But anyway, a couple really interesting articles on the like creative side today. The first article we have is, these are all from the Japan Times. And the first one we have is the immersive Fort Tokyo seeks to update theme park experience. Now, I'm still on a spot where I can get doxxed if I say the wrong things. Damn. So I'm going to phrase this in a very roundabout way that everyone will immediately see through and be able to dox me anyway. I have extensive experience with the things this article is discussing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. I have extensive experience coming up on 8-some 9 years of it, in fact, just within this. But I've been in entertainment my whole career.
Yeah.
I work in the lighting world, lighting, audio, video, pyrotechnics. I work with rigging. I work with all of it.
Mm.
And Tokyo is building a new theme park focused on what is called immersive experiences. And for those of you who don't follow the entertainment industry, this probably probably just sounds like mumbo jumbo. Immersive experience. Just call it a fucking theme park. Okay, hold on. Theme parks as most folks know them, because we have amusement parks, theme parks, and experience parks, or like immersive experiences. And they're three different things. An amusement park, as you would know it, is just rides.
Yeah.
It's for your amusement, right? You go, you ride your rides, you pay your ticket price, whatever. Maybe you buy some food and merch, but you were really, really there for the rides. That's all you went for. Six Flags.
Right.
Maybe Cedar Fair parks to some degree. Mm-hmm. Then you have theme parks. Disney, Universal, Knott's Berry Farm, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You go to these places because their attractions tend to have some overarching theme. It's in the name.
Whoa.
And the lands tend to be themed. And there's a bit more going on than just get on ride, get off ride. Hope you enjoyed it. Woo! Vomit.
Yeah.
you know, and then after theme parks, you have immersive experiences. Now, theme parks have been moving towards immersive experiences for the last 5 to 10 years. Just look at Star Cruiser over in Florida. You know, Disney World built Star Cruiser, this resort designed to be a immersive Star Wars experience.
Yeah.
And from beginning to end of your stay there, it was intended to be you literally being in the Star Wars universe. Well, Tokyo has begun embracing this called Immersive Fort Tokyo. It's in Odaiba, which, by the way, again, for those of you not familiar with Japan's sort of geography, Odaiba is well known for being both a tourist trap and the center of Japanese innovation for tourism.
Yeah.
So tourist trap because, well, everybody goes to Odaiba who goes to Tokyo, and not a tourist trap because a lot of the stuff's legit, like the Gundam animatronic that just retired and failed on its last day. Anyway, the irony of that's funny. But Odaiba is a perfect spot for this. And essentially what it's going to be is they're going to have internal attractions split amongst multiple stories. And you as the guest, instead of going in and riding a roller coaster and maybe having a story told to you while you're on it, you're going to go and be kind of, I guess the best analogy I can make is you're going to be an actor in a world or an actress in a world.
Yeah.
You are going to be part of a experience. And, a couple of the ones, like they have one called Spy Action, where you're a member of, you know, being part of a gunfight and fighting against the mafia. Another one where you are part of 19th century London. They call it Sherlock.
Yeah.
And feel like you're part of his investigations and other stuff. And they've got shows. And inevitably, they'll probably have some small rides or whatever. And they're pricing this pretty up there. 6,800 yen. Is no slouch by Japanese standards, especially when you consider Disney tickets, I think, are not much more than that. Universal tickets, I think, are like 8,000 yen. So this is...
They also, apparently we're doing some collaborations with Oshinoko and Tokyo Revengers, which is pretty cool.
I saw that in there as well. It's interesting because immersive experiences have not caught on in the U.S. yet. I think the only dominant kings would probably be Meow Wolf. I think Meow Wolf is kind of the kings of, and again, for those of you who haven't heard of it, Meow Wolf
is... even then, it's pretty small.
It's pretty niche. It's pretty localized.
It's only in America,
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think so. I'm going to look them up just real quick so we can give you accurate information, but I'm pretty sure Meow Wolf. Let's go to their official website. But Meow Wolf, yes, it is in the U.S. only. Meow Wolf has an example. They build these, God damn, I don't even know what to call them.
Yeah, they're weird.
Drug trips?
Yeah, because like the one, acid trip? I think it's the one that's in Vegas, right? Where you go in and it's just a grocery store.
Yeah,
Meow Mart.
Yeah,
you go into a grocery store, but then you find out it's kind of like there's no real products in there. And then you walk through the freezer and then you're just like in a bar.
Yeah, so they have, their listing here is The Real Unreal in Grapevine, Texas, Convergence Station in Denver, Colorado, House of Eternal Return in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Omega Mart in Las Vegas. And each of these... immersive experiences, they're acid trips. You go in, the lighting, the video, the audio, everything is designed in such a way as to immerse you. I want to use better words because we're just recycling the word immersive and experience.
Yeah.
But it's designed to pull you out of the world to such a degree that you are lost in it. In fact, one of Meow Wolf's, their website even says the goal is to have the user lose themselves in the experience. Here it says, the LA Times phrased it, getting lost will be part of the journey. But the problem with immersive experiences is, one, right now they only really cater to adults because for kids, the lack of cohesion, meaning like a binding story or a binding process, means kids don't find it very, they don't understand.
Yeah.
for kids, it really is a drug trip. They look at it and it's just trippy colors, lights, and sound. They're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But for adults, especially neurodivergent adults, which is something Meowwolf caters to, is neurodivergence. The constant texture, color, it can be a little overwhelming, and they do serve some warnings of, hey, you know, be careful, seizure warnings and epilepsy and all that. But they're just crazy. And interestingly, this hasn't taken off in the rest of the world, but Tokyo or Japan in general has decided, nah, fuck it, we're going to have one too.
Yeah.
In Odaiba, like, I don't know what they're doing with the Gundam. I think the Gundam Museum is going to stay, but now they're going to have neighbors in this incredibly immersive experience. Now, obviously, it's more family friendly. I doubt they're going to be doing
it. It was kind of funny just like looking at this article, especially the spy one. It reminds me of Spy Family Season 2 when they're on the cruise.
Literally does. Yes. Yeah. It's
and Anya's like, there's an actual fight going on, but Anya's like, shit, I can't. I
can't give up the.
Yeah, we can't scare the other people, so she like pretends like it's a
they're
show.
They're in a circus. They're in the show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's really cool because it's a really big step up for Japan's entertainment industry, because Japan right now, they're not even into theme parks. Japan doesn't have many outside of like Huitenbosch, which is like this Netherlands theme park in Kyushu, and a couple other. There's like one in Hokkaido. Yeah. I believe Sapporo has a theme park, but like theme parks are pretty.
They have Disney and Universal there, but like Osaka as far as Tokyo, like Japanese specific is
there really aren't any.
Yeah.
There's a lot of amusement parks. Japan has a ton of amusement parks, lots of coaster parks, thrill ride parks, a lot of also really small sort of like carnival fest. Yeah. The small carnival type.
Yeah.
I'm trying to come up with the word. Like the one port in Chicago. Anyway, they have like beachside Santa Monica. There we go. It's like Santa Monica Pier kind of stuff. Pier. You know.
Shit, what is that called? I used to work kind of at one.
I just can't remember the damn name of what they call it. Anyway, they have more of those than they
like
have.
Like a boardwalk sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah. So kind of cool to see them embracing something higher tech. Now, what's the next article that we've got?
More theme parks. I think. I actually haven't read through this whole thing, but apparently Japan is considering doing a Kobini Land, because there's a huge, like, via TikTok and YouTube, and everybody and their mother is talking about Kobinis. There's tons of content about it. And so apparently they were... both 7-Eleven and Lawson were kind of considering like, well, what if we make this more experiential?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because Lawson's Seiko Mart up in Hokkaido, 7-Eleven and Family Mart are the big four of convenience stores in Japan. And the convenience store market in Japan is 100% saturated. There's other brands besides those, but they are the undisputed kings, and nobody's really stepping up to kind of compete with them.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is convenience as a brand have kind of reached saturation. You can only have so much convenience in one place before you become fucking Don Quixote.
Right.
Like you can only become so exotic before you stop being a convenience store and now you're something else.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the article here, again, from the Japan Times, kind of mentions that.
Well, this one, this one's about Lawson specifically and how they're kind of losing their foothold to 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
And this is their big, like, we need to do something.
Yeah. And they're looking to do it mostly overseas. And we talked about, I think.
We talked about 7-Eleven moving over here and being more Japanese in style instead of our typical American style.
And it's interesting to see Lawson also doing that.
The same thing.
And both of them are like, you know, the fresh food experience is critical to doing that successfully, is one of the things the article mentions.
Yeah.
And it says that's a challenge overseas because of sourcing local food, supply chains, infrastructure, and all that stuff. I also think Japan would struggle with this because we have some pretty hardcore loyalists to local chains out here in the U.S. Yeah. If you're in the South, you know, Texas, Louisiana, and that Bucky's is the undisputed king of sort of convenience store.
Yeah.
If you're in the Southwest, you probably got 7-Eleven, and they're kind of the undisputed kings of that. If you're in the East and Southeast, you've got Wawa, and they're kind of known. And you've got these places everywhere.
Yeah.
So
even just your standard boring like Circle K, people
live and die
for Circle K.
Yeah. So to be fair, the market's there in terms of there are other businesses just like these already in existence in the U.S. So Lawson's or 7-Eleven being like, oh, we're going to try to branch out and we're worried if there will be a market. No, there is a market.
Right.
The difference is, like we were talking about many weeks ago, many episodes ago, it's not the market they need to worry about.
Right.
It's the Japanese style of convenience store that they need to work about.
It would be a little difficult, depending on where they put it.
Well, and like how much are they going to tweak themselves for American audiences? Or, sorry, American consumers. I'm always in entertainment mode, dude. For American consumers.
Yeah.
So, like, as an easy example, food. What are you going to serve? Are you doing the hot dogs, pizza, burgers, kind of hot finger foods route that maybe a fried chicken that most American convenience stores do? Or are you going to do the whole onigiri, donburi, rice balls, sushi, you know, nigiri sushi?
Yeah.
Like, are you going to do that too? Because that's going to be hard. There are, I can't imagine that taking off in the U.S. nearly the way it does in Japan. And then the other conveniences, like, sure, 7-Elevens and Wawas and stuff have full-service delis nowadays and full food support and drinks, and you can even get some medicines and stuff.
Yeah.
But full-service banking, bill paying, translation service, I don't know. I just don't see Americans using that stuff. I feel like no one wants to be in a convenience store longer than a couple seconds, and that's that's no different in Japan. Like, they go in, do their business, and they leave.
Yeah,
but
I could see them doing probably well for this one specifically. It seems they're more so focused on just the drinks and food aspect of it. But like we were saying last time, like, if you put one of these more full service things in a small town, like, you know, 1,000 people. I think it would do well just because it's like a one-stop shop. Like,
yeah,
we kind of already do that in the U.S. Well, we don't do that at all in the U.S., excuse me. But we have like the quintessential small town. Like, every small town has a Family Dollar or a Dollar Tree.
Or some
and then
sort of,
like a gas station. And if they're really big, if they got like 2,000 people, they'll have a Walmart, which is basically your one-stop shop for the U.S. But I think like that whole thing would work well in those small towns. But in bigger towns, I think it would just be rivaling.
Yeah, and you're going to get snuffed. You're going to get... It's,
yeah,
you kind of... 7-Eleven will survive because 7-Eleven, but Lawson's, especially Lawson's, like, I don't...
I can see... See, it depends, again, it depends on how strategic they are, because if they put them in, like, New York City and L.A., where you're going to have a lot of weebs to begin with, they're going to go there just
maybe.
Because...
I hadn't even thought about the cultural implications of people who like
Japan. Think about it. If one landed in our city...
We would go. We would go to Family
We would be
all
there
the
every day. Yeah,
that's true.
So they'd have to be a little bit more strategic about it. Maybe, like, supplant the, or, like, put themselves in the U.S. and, like, be more of a household name and then move into smaller towns and be like, hey, we do a hell of a lot more. Just come to us. Could work, but they need to be super strategic about it.
Yeah. And the other article we have talks about the exact same thing, because it talks about 7-Eleven looking to explore making their stores bigger and more full service as well. Less on the Lawson side. Lawson's is going for the experience, the Japanese convenience experience exclusively, and bringing that to other nations. And something we didn't mention, by the way, we're obviously Americans talking about this, but they're exploring other foreign markets. The U.S. is not the only one.
Yeah.
I can definitely see Lawson's, Family Mart, Seiko Mart, and all that doing well in even Canada or the U.K.
Yeah.
There's probably tons of places where they can insert themselves and do really, really well.
I just
in the U.S., it's so fucking big, I feel like you'd be struggling to get a foothold in the market.
Sorry, I got completely distracted because I'm reading this article right now, and it states that in order for the project to be successful, for a 7-Eleven to be successful, it needs to make $4,600 per day. That seems so low.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, if you're paying people well, like, that's 2 managers a month that you're making per day. Like, how much?
Well,
what is the overhead that you're?
To be fair, though, if you're launching a brand new convenience store, that might be a realistic number.
Yeah.
Daily.
Well, I mean, obviously.
Yeah,
it just, to me, is like,
it seems
really 4,000 a day. That seems crazy.
Well, you like for the Japanese, that's probably a completely doable number just because of the amount of traffic and density they get to a convenience store anywhere.
Yeah.
In the U.S., let me think about a Wawa. If I think about the morning rush at a Wawa, they probably pull 200 people through in the morning rush or so, just in food. If each of those people is paying a $9 average, that's 1,800. Yeah, I guess it. they would really have to have good market capitalization and good market penetration. Like they would mm-hmm. genuinely have to.
Yeah. Well, I think it also just kind of goes to show like probably how cheap certain taxes are and
not even getting
property
into that.
Yeah. Like stuff, like how much the building and everything costs,
overhead.
How much like,
yeah,
well, yeah, your overhead as a whole, but like how much everything costs. Cause again, $4,000 for a store, like you still have employees to pay. You got to buy all of your products.
Yeah,
you
got
to pay for bills and stuff. Like, yeah, that's the thing that blew my mind is like not so much that it wouldn't be possible, but rather
that it's
that's
possible.
All it takes.
Yeah, that's all it takes. Japan, yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So the interesting thing is like, you know, I like this phrase. Our stores are currently not as popular with women, families, and younger people.
What?
That is bullshit. That is absolute bullshit. Okay, I cannot tell you how many Gen Z and millennial Japanese Instagram accounts I follow and watch mm-hmm. and TikTok too on a daily basis. They fucking love convenience. What the hell?
Yeah.
These people live off of this. And don't even get me started on foreigners in Japan live off convenience. I don't understand. I can understand families because for families, a home-cooked meal and sort of the family intimacy that comes from just buying, you know, eating a full meal or buying at a grocery store, doing shopping together as a family is probably more appealing than going to a convenience. I get it. Like convenience, even in the U.S., we have that sort of snobbery of, oh, you went and got that at a, like if a person went and got milk mm-hmm. and one person went to this to a grocery store to get milk and the other person went to a convenience store, we would probably look at the person who went to the convenience store a little weird, just like you went to the convenience store for milk.
Yeah,
like I guess it's just not something you wouldn't do your grocery shopping there. Not really.
Yeah, not usually.
So we do have a bit of snobbery towards this. I can see why families specifically are like, nah, we don't want to go to a convenience store. We'd rather go to a grocery store.
Right.
But if that's their concerns, like trying to expand 7-Eleven and come to the U.S., it's like, well, and the trial products they're mentioning here, by the way, easy to prepare groceries, that's always going to be a hit. Baby product? I feel like that's, yeah. For moms? Yeah, baby products, dude. Like being able to find, I was going to say feed. Get that baby feed.
Yeah.
It's got a high nutrient hay. Yeah. Woo.
Gonna go down to the tractor supply and pick up my baby.
My baby feed.
Feed. Yeah.
Baby feed. It's got kibble in the box. yeah, no. But I can see being able to get baby food, diapers, child supplies, and sort of that stuff at a convenience store useful. Trendy makeup. We have that. Wait, no, do we? Wow, I just had to think about that. Do we even do like or any sort of? They have a really limited supply of body products at American convenience stores. It's mostly some body wash, maybe some deodorant and shampoo. I think that's really. It's the kind of stuff if you were traveling.
Right, you might need.
Now, but see, that's where truck stops dominate the market, though, because a truck stop.
So I was thinking, like, truck stop is where I would think about that. A normal gas station, I don't imagine I don't think I've seen that. Not that I'm, like, looking for it, I guess.
No, but
I don't think I've really seen it.
Honestly, if 7-Eleven and Lawson's want to expand on foreign markets, I think truck stops are the money for them. Now, they're going to run into some issues about their target demographic and penetrating that market because there's a lot of loyalty there.
Yeah.
But if you're going to compete, that makes total sense just because they do what you already do. They've got showers. They've got laundries. They've got mail services and legal services, a notary, a fucking Flying J's have notaries. And it's like, what the hell? It's like, but it makes sense. If you need to do something on the road, where else are you going to go? You're going to go drive into the city in your fucking 53-footer.
Yeah.
You know,
I think the thing is, if Lawson went in and said, we are Japan, that would probably
screwed.
But if they came in and they were just like, oh, we're just
another one.
We're just another one. Yeah, another one. But we do X, Y, and Z and we do it better. Okay. I don't think they would get hate. And to be honest, I think the racists don't even know what Lawson is.
No, really? No.
Yeah.
And 7-Eleven.
And 7-Eleven already has a stigma behind it anyway. They're not going to be thinking, they're going to be thinking India
to
begin with.
Well, but the thing is, if 7-Eleven went to, I'll be honest, if 7-Eleven branched out to truck stops, I think people would stop treating them like the usual franchise operation.
Yeah.
Because
also if they called a 7 and I Holdings instead of 7-Eleven, that would be different. Separate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that sounds way more fancy and corporate.
So both them, Lawson's and Family Mart, I think would do well to go into the truck market. But I don't, again, I don't think.
Honestly, with a name like Family Mart, they could take over the family or like the Dollar Tree.
Yeah, they could compete on that level easily. And especially because they'd be serving food and other stuff.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that is going to conclude our discussion on kombinis and just overall large experiences that Japan's trying to get into. This has been the Shinigami Love Apples podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, or if you just want to write some hate mail, feel free to write in to the shinigamiloveapples.podcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you or hate to hear from you. Well, you know, we're fine both ways. I'm just over here vamping. It's bad. I didn't even rehearse this.
You can also enlighten me on what the fuck was going on in your name, because I still stand by the fact that it's horrible hot garbage. And I've been Googling what the fuck how the time travel even works, because Stiggy's over here talking about how he's so much better than me, the little fucking cuck. And so, am I allowed to say that?
Anyway.
And I can't figure out what the fuck it is. So tell me, please.
Anyway, now that we finished raging about Kimi no Nawa.
No, I'm not done.
He's still going. I'm just going to go ahead and dump him real quick. I have the power of the mute button. Thank you for tuning in. We will see you next week.